I'm Rick Hansen, and I want to welcome everyone here. Today is, April 6th, 2011, right? And it's kind of amazing how the years unfold, isn't it? It's said sometimes that we all know that other people die, but are endlessly amazed when it happens to us, you know? And to introduce tonight's topic, and by the way, I think I'll start out by sitting because I went for a run earlier today and I'm a little thrashed, I noticed, in my legs. But that's another sign of aging, isn't it? But anyway, we've been engaging in here the general theme of relationships. And to kind of wrap up, what the Buddha taught were the four fundamental valuable places to rest attention. He called them the four foundations of mindfulness, or the resting places of mindfulness. And we've been relating those to the theme of relationships, especially the last of the four, which is kind of a collection of major significant themes in Buddhism. And the theme we talked about last week, as it applies to relationship cred, as I think of it sometimes, was the Buddha's notions of the aggregates of experience, the idea that you can tease apart, for example, an emotional reaction, an upset with someone, into these elements. And as you do that, as you tease it apart, for example, into the part that's sensation, the part that has to do with the pleasantness or unpleasantness of what's there, the label we put on it, the various thoughts and emotions we add to it, and then consciousness itself, as we tease apart those aspects of getting upset with our parents or our mate or our kids or someone on the evening news, right? As we tease those elements apart, suddenly we start having insight, we start realizing what leads to suffering and what leads to happiness, and the experience itself loses a kind of brick-like solidity and starts feeling more like fizzy foam or something. And it has less force on us, and we suffer less. We become less identified with it and so forth. So that's what we explored last time. And I believe the talk of that is posted now, if you want to hear it, on my website. And I think it's also up at wisebrain.org. Okay. Tonight, what I'd like to talk about are the five hindrances, which are another major collection of themes in the fourth foundation of mindfulness. And we are to be mindful of these hindrances. Well, what is a hindrance? It's something that holds you back. Okay. And the five main ones, according to the Buddha, that were useful to put attention on were greed, broadly defined, you know, lust, craving, gotta have it, insistence, and all the rest of that. Second, hatred, broadly defined as fear or anger in all its nuances, aversion generally. We don't like it. We want to push it away. Third, what's called restlessness and remorse, which is interesting to explore. It has to do with both a certain fidgetiness and, you know, the thing that gets in the way of meditation practice in particular. It's hard to settle, okay? As well as the idea of remorse, the sense of being caught up in regrets and emotional reactions and feeling bad about oneself, because that's what remorse really is at root. And then the fourth hindrance is sloth and torpor. Sloth, like just laziness or indolence, not being ardent and resolute, and torpor, a kind of blah. You know, there's a place for, you know, right, sitting out on the beach, thank goodness, finally, but not as a way of life. Okay. And then the fifth hindrance is doubt. And I'd like to explore that hindrance in particular as it bears in some ways on relationships. And I'm biased a little bit with regard to teaching, and I think it's important to respect a body of knowledge or a discipline and learn something about it. And also, so I think I have a duty that's self-inflicted, I suppose, to want to make sure that the curriculum, as it were, set it forth by the Buddha is actually moved through. And also, though, I think it's useful to look at these things, you know, in fresh ways. Or hopefully fresh ways. So doubt as applied to relationships. So what does doubt mean? Okay. The Buddha is not talking about healthy doubt. or healthy skepticism. As he famously said, ehi pasiko, see for yourself, right? So he's not talking about, you know, he's not talking about just taking things on faith alone. It's appropriate to doubt that you can jump off a building flapping your arms and, you know, and avoid hurting yourself. That's useful. It's useful to doubt that you can run a federal government that's running deficits in excess of $1 trillion a year for very long without ending up in trouble. You know, there's a place for useful doubt, okay? He's talking about the hindrance of doubt, and doubt there being not being confident in what you know to be true, or having an endless kind of inner corrosion. Doubt is like rust in the mind. It just kind of eats away at confidence and security and serenity, right? That's what he's talking about. And in particular tonight, I'd like to talk about two kinds of, I think, pernicious doubt. One is doubt in one's own worth and goodness, and doubt in the response of others, particularly the response of others if we live from our own natural goodness. So to enter this, I invite you, first of all, to just be aware for the moment of healthy skepticism. Like, imagine, if you like, someone who you don't have a lot of confidence in their sincerity or their truthfulness. Maybe imagine a stereotypical, you know, salesman, huckster, or a political figure you don't care for, and they're rattling on, and or it's your garrulous Uncle Bob at Thanksgiving, always just pronounces about you know what or whatever. Okay, so just try to just call it the sense first of healthy skepticism. What's that like? So if you will, what are a few words that you might throw out just from the group here that are just kind of go with healthy skepticism?
Explain it to me. I may be ignorant about it.
Okay. Yeah, tell me more. Show me the facts. Show me the beef. Right? Other people? Yeah. Okay, great, great. How's this relevant? Yeah, to me. Yeah, thank you. Okay, others? Yeah. Yeah. For me, there's a visceral feeling of sorting, you know, piles, like yes, no, maybe, crazy as a loon, you know, whatever, just sorting. Okay, now if you could bring to mind a sense of, you know, self-doubt or unhealthy doubt, needing proofs, for example, from others, or second-guessing yourself or others. What's that feel like? Okay, some words. Yeah, Linda. Yeah, okay. Others? Yeah. You feel it in the body. What's it like in the body? Ah. Can you say a little more what you mean? Yeah. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's an
option. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. I get that. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. You feel like it in the, again, it's like a smothering cloud almost. You just feel the energy just going around. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, can you say a little more what you mean by that? Yeah. Yeah. Great. On retreat?
Yeah.
Mm. sense or experiences the difference between healthy dono, you know, dono mind, right? Like that has a feeling of healthiness to it, dono, including the internal activity of not needing to know so much what things mean inside, but more just taking them as bare sensation or feeling or thought. Okay. And then on the other hand, not sure. You know, the feeling, if you will, not sure. I think that's an important difference. What's not sure like in that unhealthy or not so helpful way I'm talking about it compared to don't know? Open, don't know. Yeah, right there. Not sure is fearful. Right. Thank you. Yeah, with that back? This is good. I didn't think about this, but this is good. Dealing with my neurosis here, but yeah. Thank you, everyone, for helping me. Interesting. So let's get that right. So, and then I know there are people over here too that guilt related to not sure. Can you say more what you mean? Yeah, now I get it. Thank you. Okay, yeah, there were some people over here with this difference. Great, there, good high hand, yeah. Yeah, thank you. It's striking what you're saying too, this, the pervasiveness, right? Of doubt. It becomes almost like wallpaper. You know. A couple more, yeah. Thank you. I suppose the don't know is okay. It's okay, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then, so now, next step. See if you can be aware of what it's like to be, you know, the mind attitude. What's the attitude or feeling of being, of doubting your own worth? And you might explore some, you know, hot buttons, like, you know, I was a skinny, nerdy kid, so I definitely had doubt of my own, like, athleticism or manliness as a young guy. Or other people, you know, might have doubt, for example, of themselves because reading was a struggle in the first grade or two. Or maybe the women I know are fairly unique, but maybe there's doubt around the body, male or female, right? Whatever it is. So maybe start with something that you is a painful one, or there's a hot button there for you about doubting your worth with regard to that. And know what that's like. And then maybe explore other aspects of yourself in light of that knowing of the smell of doubt, right? Know the smell of doubt. Start with an easy one that you've had doubt of worth about. Feelings of insecurity or inadequacy. Not sure of your worth. Maybe not sure if you're that lovable or that smart or pretty or strong. In other words, and as you do that, with this kind of hot button example, try to find something relatively easy to do this with. See if you could tease apart the part of this experience that's the doubter or the doubting in the mind, distinct from the doubted. What's it like to feel doubted with regard to your own goodness or worth in some way? In other words, like a part of you that's doubting you, kind of an inner perspective, and then how it feels deep down to feel in doubt of your own worth. And then, letting go of that, now a little good news. See if you can bring to mind alternately something that you have a lot of confidence in yourself about. Like you know that, you know, you've really tried to be a good parent. Or you know that, you really are smarter than the average bear, you know? Or you know that, you know, there's a certain strength in you or determination, or that you know you're quite fair to a fault, perhaps. And see what that's like. Maybe just a sense of your own good heart. Love, there's love in you. You know that you have love in you. There is love in your heart. What's that like? Do you have that sense of confidence or faith or conviction? You might find it helpful to distinguish between three little parts of this. One is the experience itself of this good quality in you. Like what intelligence or fairness or love or strength feels like. Second, the confidence in, or the knowing of, or the recognition of that good quality in yourself, so that you believe it. Yeah, you believe that that good quality really does exist. And then third, what it's like to have that kind of confidence in your own worth in this regard. To know it, to believe it. And then for the last part in this reflection, and feel free to go at your own pace, if you can, stay centered in this kind of experience and the knowing of your own worth, not in doubt of it, at least in this regard, and maybe more broadly. And then maybe bring to mind first a person that you feel good about and close to. And imagine what it is like and would be like with them if you were with them while being grounded in this real felt sense of knowing of your own worth. So that you knew you were of worth while you were interacting with this other person. And then one step further, imagine someone, if you like, who's a little to moderately challenging. Not the ultimate horror show, but someone who's, you know, a little sticky, someone you work with, maybe a family member, someone who there are good qualities in the relationship, but there's maybe some contentiousness or something, some friction. And there too, imagine what it would be like if you can. To be really grounded and in touch with and having confidence in your own worth while interacting with this other person. What might become different in the feeling of the interaction, the way you would interact, if you did so while staying really confident in and having confidence in your worth? For example, how might you act differently in word or tone if you had confidence in your worth with this person? Or how might some of their reactions be experienced in new ways as not relevant, really, to your own worth, just divergent, just on another plain entirely, not, And who knows, maybe how might the other person possibly be drawn into acting maybe better towards you you are grounded in your work. Okay. So, if you like, I propose that in a minute or so you get a partner. And you can always sit out. And if you get a partner, I'll give you time signals about 3 or 4 minutes each way. One person will mainly listen, one person will mainly talk, our usual format. If you're the listener, really try to listen and refrain from giving advice. That's pretty much it. And just kind of reflect on whatever you saw or experienced here that's meaningful to you. And then we'll come back and discuss this as a whole. When you get together with a partner, why don't you just pick an A and a B, let the A go first so that I can give time signals. Is that clear? Everybody okay? So why don't you grab a partner if you want one. And feel free to move around. Duos are generally best because then there's more time to talk. If you want a partner and don't have one, raise your hand. Right there, over there. Raise your hand. Keep your hand up. Is that okay? Okay. Oh, there. You want a partner? Oh, if you want a partner and don't have one, raise your hand. Oh, well. Maybe you want to be my partner. Okay, pick an A and a B. Okay, A's begin. Okay. We're resuming. Come on back into the room here. So, any insights or reflections, lessons, good experiences, anything? Great.
One of my challenges is over-analyzing situations. So even after I make a decision, my mind continues to think of ramifications even the day after, so I've made a better decision. I'm not at peace. I think I've got a lot of empathy. I've always think about the people that are impacted with the decisions I'm making.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about that. So I struggle with putting closure on decisions that I make.
Right, and not second guessing them, doubting them in the rear view mirror, in a sense.
Of
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if this is at all useful for that particular thing, but something that has really served me is to force myself to really clarify my values and to prioritize them whenever, as much as I can, and realize that in terms of the teaching of the Buddha, wisdom is so much about giving up a lesser good for a greater good. And so we have to define what we consider to be a greater good, but that's based on a clarity of values. So, you know, and it's kind of a recognition that it also reminds me of this comment made by, of all people, Henry Kissinger. He said that when decisions get to the Oval Office, the presidency, and take this as a metaphor as well as a literal truth, they're always 51-49. Because the 60-40 decisions, let alone the 50 or even the 55-45 decisions, have been made at a lower level. And the ones at the highest level, they're tough calls, by definition. By definition, easy calls have been made previously. That's where the tough calls get made. And they get made wrongly sometimes because, you know, to play it another way, the lady and the tiger, right, or the prince and the tiger, you know, behind one door is everything you've ever dreamed for. Behind the other door is a tiger that will devour you. And you know with perfect certainty that behind the left-hand door is everything you've dreamed of. And behind the right-hand door, there's a 49% chance. So a 51% chance everything you want is behind the left-hand door. 49% chance everything, you know, you're going to be Eden behind the right-hand door. Which door should you pick every time? Well, you have... Well, okay. But let's say you have to choose. Nice try. But let's say you have to pick one. I'm not hearing a firm response. Yeah. And yet, 49 times out of 100, you'll get Eden. But if you have to choose, it's the right choice. So there's a sense, I think, of appreciating sometimes, first of all, having clear values. That really helps undermine doubt. And also appreciating that when you make a decision in the context of uncertainty, you can only make it based on your state of knowledge at the time. You know, even if, like our son plays online poker a fair amount, he helped put himself through college, God help us in part. And, you know, there are all these plays where, you know, he knows the odds going in. Everyone at the table knows the odds, that it's like 60-40. And, you know, so he puts in his money and he'll, you know, maybe $1,000. It's real money when you're making a living doing it. And yet 40% of the time he'll lose it like that. Was it the wrong choice to put the money in? No, it was the right choice based on your state of knowledge at the time. So I mean, those are just two, they're more analytic thoughts or less emotional. But, you know, for me that's been actually quite helpful in cutting through the thickets of doubt in the mind. It's not the only way, but it's been a way. Other reflections? Oh, yeah, right there. Yeah. Right. Yeah. What happened when you imagined moving into a challenging relationship with confidence in your own worth? What impact did that have? To recognize your own worth as you moved into a relationship.
I realized I wouldn't be as reactive as I sometimes am to little meaningless events that the other person presents, or what I might take as a criticism of, or a strong suggestion. If holding the sense, I realize that it's important to manage reactiveness.
Thank you. Yeah, great. That's so interesting, isn't it? That confidence in your quality, which draws attention this way, in a sense, actually lets us be more here with the other there. I knew for myself that I would be more direct and I would do less hemming and hawing and preemptive strikes. You know, anticipating all the possible objections and faults that would be found, and you know, it would be more like direct. So I don't know. What was it for you when you imagined entering into a challenging situation with a sense of your own quality? Yeah, first Harold, then you. Okay, first Harold.
What occurred to me is that when there's for me, the thing that being in a good place, a place without doubt, is being a place where I'm really aware that. The quality that I admire and self is being committed to the truth. So if I'm in that place and there is a challenging situation, I know that that means whatever comes up, I'm going to be looking at not just for me. I'm going to be looking at for the other person too, because that is the right place to be. So there's an ability there to then deal with what comes up without having to fear that the other person is going to get hurt. They're looking out for them too.
Thank you. Yeah, right there.
I felt that I would have more of a sense of, because I felt fine about my own self. I felt a sense of generosity towards the individual I was. So in a sense of, well, they just do what they do, and it's not affecting on me necessarily.
Yeah. Good. That's great. Yeah. other examples, yeah. Yeah.
I realize that I might actually be more willing, actually have a willingness to open up a dormant relationship with my system. It really came to me when I was talking.
That's great. You know, it's very touching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Great. That little finger. I didn't know if you were bidding for the painting or not. But anyway, right there.
I think I would just be more feeling peaceful.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I would just be more peaceful more often.
Yeah. Yeah, love. Like, what's the relationship between a sense of your worth and letting yourself be more loving? Very good. And see what you're saying, I think you're speaking to the community level of having confidence in ourselves and how that affects things in a larger scale. Yeah. Yeah. How about a couple more and then we'll move to a wrap tonight. So how about you and then you? So first Betsy, yeah.
Being okay with yourself, you're offering the rest of the world a gift, and the rest of the world is all rolling in the same pond in some way. So I guess it's what she said, that it was very intimate, the experience was intimate, and it was very special.
I think, you know, if we had had more time, and, you know, there's another kind of doubt to let go of, too, which is any kind of doubt about the beauty of the other person. And you're talking about that doubt being not present whatsoever. You know, particularly past the mask. You know, the beauty of the other person past the mask, past their sense of disturbance and dukkha and suffering. And reaction, just the doubt, just relaxing and releasing, relaxing the doubt that you were not loved deeply in your family, and relaxing the doubt that you truly have not been deeply loved, or are not currently deeply loved. It's very transforming about that, isn't it? It's like laying that burden down, isn't it? We don't need it. We could lay it down. We don't have to cling to it. Craving and clinging takes lots of forms, including clinging to doubt. What's it like to let that one go and not doubt love that's real, not doubt worth that's real? One last one, person. Yeah, that's right. It's like that contact with the primacy of your experience takes you into a kind of authority, you know, a lack of doubt, because you know it. It's right there. You know it, right? Yeah. That's great. Well, how about we sit for a minute? And if you will, I'll adapt a somewhat well-known saying from a major Southeast Asian teacher, Ajahn Chah. And I kind of encourage you to let this evening sink in, and as you kind of reflect on this little saying here. So if you sense or imagine letting go of a little doubt, to paraphrase Ajahn Chah, you'll have a little happiness. Imagine letting go of a little doubt. And the happiness that will come to you. And then imagine letting go of a lot of doubt. Much or even most of your doubt. And then, to paraphrase Ajahn Chah, you'll have a lot of happiness. Imagine the lot of happiness that will come to you if you let go of a lot of your doubt, of your own work, and the goodwill and love for you from others. And then last, to paraphrase Ajahn Chah, if you let go completely, you will be completely happy. Imagining letting go of doubt and doubting completely, no longer clinging or craving, and opening to the complete happiness that can walk through that door. free of the hindrance of doubt.